watch?
My name is Jean Cook, and I'm the Outreach Director for Future of Music Coalition. Future of Music is a policy think tank based in Washington, D.C. We do research, education, and advocacy on behalf of independent musicians. I thought the coalition was great. We were working with Prometheus, we were working with Pacifica, we were working with Public Radio Capital, National Federation of Community Broadcasters, and each member of the coalition was working with different constituencies, but we were all sharing information. We would do things like have conference calls with engineers and lawyers to talk through tips about how to fill out this form or what you really need to care about when you're putting your engineering exhibit together. Being able to share information and going out there and kind of working in a coordinated way, trying to make sure that people aren't falling through the cracks and being supportive and being able to reflect on what we were doing. Because this is a coalition of organizations. We've worked on different kinds of issues together with each of these organizations at one point or another, and this is always an opportunity to build and strengthen our relationships with other organizations and learn how to work better.
My name is Emily Geddes, and I work at Prometheus Radio Project, and I've been working on the Full Power campaign since October 2006. By pulling that information together and then pulling all of the people that are interested in that information and just really diffusing information very quickly, I think that's why it's so possible for so many people to apply, is because our whole purpose was to share as much as possible and to really put the power in the group's hands to make this happen for themselves.
Mary Francis, Full Power applicant.
I really appreciated all of the support that I got from Pacifica and from the people that they recommended, Radio for People, Common Frequency, all of those people at Public Radio Capital. Just fabulous, wonderful volunteer help from other people who are also applying for radio applications.
Being tuned in and seeing other communities working through the media, listserv that was going, you know, it made me feel really connected to people across the country.
Again, applicant Diane Brown.
I just feel very hopeful about what we're doing in that our little organization down here in this little community is going to be part of it.
We learned that there are more people out there who are willing to support our station, and that's going to help as far as the construction costs and so forth.
Myron Jackson, Full Power applicant.
We've also found some very, at least regionally famous people who would like to take part with new radio programs on a variety of issues, including the environment and so forth. So we're just thrilled with the way everything's coming together on it.
The support from the community has been fantastic.
Mary Francis.
People that I never knew have volunteered money and time, and it's just been a wonderful trip doing this.
It's been nice to have been part of Radio for People, because not only could we share, you know, how things were going within our different communities, but other people had ideas of how to do things.
Again, Peggy Berryhill with Native Public Media.
I've never started a station. I've been a program director for three stations and a producer, independent and a network producer. It's been my life. Starting a station was new to me, all of this. And I think it might have been the same for many people in the Radio for People Coalition. And so we've all learned a lot as well.
This was a completely new process for me and the tribe, because we have no experience in radio. We've never done anything with radio, and so this has been a completely new process for us, and definitely had some learning experiences along the way, and I think we feel pretty confident. We've had a wonderful group of attorneys and engineers who have been working diligently to get our applications in and make sure that everything was done correctly. We've had lots of support from Pacifica Radio. We've had lots of support from Native Public Media, along with our engineers and attorneys. This wonderful support group has definitely made it easier for us.
Diane Brown, Full Power applicant.
Now that we've got our license applied for, got it filed, I think it's going to wake people up. They're going to see, well, here's a group that is really out there doing something very special and very big. I think it's going to generate interest in the community and outside of the immediate Port St. Joe area, the entire Gulf County and over in the county next to it, which is experiencing the same kind of problems as are going on in Gulf County and Port St. Joe. I think it's going to help us to get organized.
Oh, my goodness. Radio is
essential.
Chicago journalist Gabriel Piamonte.
It's not only a matter of whether or not it's relevant, but it continues to hold the promise that it always has. There's nothing like the ability of radio to reach into communities.
Right now, it's kind of a thankless task. You know, people are spending all this time doing paperwork and figuring things out and running around looking at radio towers and trying to get funding and talking to lawyers and talking to engineers. But someday, I really hope and I really believe we're going to look back and we're saying, my God, how did these radio stations get here? What a difference it makes. Someday we're going to look back and I think we'll just see the fruits that have been born from these efforts, and it'll be very satisfying. This will be seen as a great time and a very important time, and I'm happy to have been a part of it, frankly.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Be the Media, a program about the historic filing window from October 12th to October 22nd, 2007. We thank the many radio applicants and professionals from across the country who agreed to be interviewed for this program. And we thank them for their time and hard work participating in media democracy. Music was provided by Leo Kotke and Bob Everingham. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producers were Ursula Rudenberg and me, Doug George, at Pacifica Radio in New York City. This is Doug George saying thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, Bathurst Spears Broadsides, and I'll turn on the mic a little so as not to blast you away. 2 hours of, well, reviewing the city council's latest shenanigans and the community's response to the civil rights that we hopefully will still retain in spite of the city council. Stay tuned.
I'll spin and it's there for the taking. If I'm not spinning, I'm wasting my time. And upon me to make you fine, I might have a few things to teach you soon. You never know what you could have come and what's undone. Overcome, yeah, here I have it for I am. Can't you see it's written in my pen? You may not understand, but in the still deliver it in this deliverance. I'm convinced this is the way it's always been. And I'll get rid of the opposition. I got no room for opposition in this space. That's just the way it is. I have before I am. Can't you see it's written in my plan? You may not understand, but in the end, I'll come out the bigger man. To the loss of the demons of reason on my side, and I'm here to tell myself that my day will come. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. forgot about now. I have it for I am. Can you see it's written in my plan? You may not understand, but in the end I'll come out the bigger man. To the lost I will abide. Keep the demons a reason on my side. And I'm here to tell myself that
and that was Phoenix, Street Singer, a real long title, Learn It Right the First Time, because they won't teach it to you twice, on her album, If It Has Limbs, It's Probably Useless. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and we have a studio line in case you want to call, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, the area code for those who are calling from overseas, 831. So feel free to jump on the line and give a call. You can also catch me off air on the Huff Line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group I work with, civil rights for the homeless being our goal. And that's 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. If you're interested in helping out Free Radio, the number to call, I hope you got a pencil for all these numbers, and if you don't, call the Huff Line. That's perhaps the easiest number to remember, and I'll try to get back to you with the details, 423-HUFF, or go to the Free Radio website, or Freak Radio, or Santa Cruz website, and that's freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org. And the message phone, however, in case you suddenly have a PSA you want to give us, or you have some questions you want to be answered off-air, or you have some equipment to donate, or a nice fat check, is 427-4523. Sounds like somebody is calling in with perhaps a substantial donation. Who knows? Hi there, donor. You're on Free Radio.
Hello. Your announcement is very surprising because all this time it was Danielle Savage's album by that title, and suddenly Phoenix has the same album by that title.
Yes, it's a strange mystery. And in fact, you know, I have to sit corrected, caller. Indeed, it was Danielle Savage. Obviously, you've been listening to too much Free Radio.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I know it's not a big important thing, but I was a little curious.
Well, I know that you're a street singer. Have you actually ever met either Phoenix or Danielle Savage?
Yes.
And are you getting tired of hearing their music on the air? Come on, speak up.
I want more local musicians. Danielle was not a local musician. She was just a visitor.
No, she was, but she had a great voice, I've got to say.
I wouldn't deny that. She is definitely good. I liked her from the beginning. It's a very old, old visit. She was probably about 3 years ago she was here.
More than that. Yeah, I think even more, 4 years maybe. You know, you are Valerie, of course. What is it? Vicious Song Valerie.
Vision Song?
Vision Song. That sounds better. I like that.
I think that's what you call it.
You're out there doing your thing on Tuesday night, feeding people and strumming away. And you were there, of course, last night, or I say the night before last, when the city council was studiously severing us from the parking lots.
Oh, you mean the shitty council?
Well, I sometimes call them that. They certainly inspire a loathing in me on occasion, no question about it.
Yeah.
Although, you know, nothing wrong with a little shit every now and then. It happens. But, yeah, I mean, rather than get fecal about it, I'm wondering about the streets. I know that there may be a fecal quality to the streets, too, given the fact that we have this situation with the bathrooms, which I always bring up, that there's no public bathrooms at night. The porta potties have all been closed down, and I guess you can wander into the bars and try to find a place there. It's interesting. I know one of the main arguments about crime and lurkers and problems around the parking garages last year, one man claimed it was because of the bars that are open. That a lot of the problems develop because of guys, mostly guys, I imagine, who come out of bars and have got testosterone and maybe one too many.
Shortage of bathrooms.
Yeah, shortage of bathrooms. And also, I mean, they just, you know, they, but I guess that the sports bar at the corner of front in SoCal is closed down, so it's no longer there. What's happening on the streets, Valerie? What's happening? You know, you're out there. You actually were talking to me earlier today about a trip up and down the streets that you had. Any report?
Well, there's a lot of stuff happening, but I was particularly complaining about seeing an awful lot of down-and-out people sitting on the street with cardboard. And just like some places, it was a couple of them per block. And, you know, lots of tourists, you know, frowning at them or looking at them a little bit wary, which they seem like perfectly friendly people to me. And, you know, they're getting by, but, you know, it's getting cold and it's getting tough. And the people are looking like, yeah, they're dreading the winter coming, and it doesn't look good. And there's no place to hang out. When it rains, I don't know what they're doing, but I'm sure they're having a heck of a time. You know, from my account from Craig, who has been your guest, and I've talked to him many times.
Craig Canada, medical marijuana patient.
Yeah, he's visited the different areas of trying to find a place just to stand under an awning. They're so darn short nowadays. And then, of course, I've seen cops tell them to leave when they're standing under those things. And where are they supposed to go? I don't know. And
when was the last time you saw a police officer tell someone standing under an awning to leave?
Well, you know, it wasn't raining. It hasn't been raining for a while, and I wasn't out the recent rains that much. But, you know, I used to see it a lot the past few years. And I don't know. It looks a little more like somebody's stomping the ground and watching the cockroaches run. And it's, you know, people actually now, you know, I used to think of that and think, people don't really think like that, do they? Until I started reading Sentinel blogs and hearing and reading about this just like, grotesque stuff people say about human beings. It's shocking. Of course, you know, when I was in school, people always got a thrill out of putting people down. So, you know, I really shouldn't be that shocked, but I guess I kept thinking we've grown up and we have a maturity of caring for each other. Obviously, people are still acting like five-year-olds most of the time, and that's pretty sad. So, and then, you know, to see the city council people saying, you know, that they're potential criminals, which is, I think, an unfair statement just because they look a little bit seedy, or also the fact that because there's a drug war going on, good luck even having a little medical marijuana, whether you have a card or not. It's, you know, it's drug war down there, and you're a criminal just doing that. Of course, now you're a criminal for sleeping the past 10 years or whatever, 20 years it's been now. And
30 years.
Is it 30 years? Oh, my God.
Yeah,
you know,
1978, actually.
I hope one day there'll be kids that'll go, just like I was shocked when I found out there were blacks drinking out of drinking fountains separate from us, white only and the black only. I hope one day there'll be kids going, you're kidding me. You mean the people who didn't have money were considered criminals automatically? That's an awful thing to how to treat people. I don't know. It's shocking to me. So it's kind of depressing when you go down the street. For a little while there, maybe it was because it was summer, I felt like I could walk down the street and pretty much feel like there were very few people sitting on the sidewalks with cardboard, but it seems to be accumulating, and it's looking like a big, an epidemic of people just popping up. And to me, it's a sign of the times, a sign of the economic problems, the emotional problems people are going through because they're so separated from each other, because people are creating fear and a lot of difficulty to get along because there isn't money. You know, good luck two people living in the same house getting along if they don't have enough money. It's just,
Well, I appreciate the update. I'm gonna roll, I guess, now into the parking lot law that came up at City Council.
Yeah, there's not much to
Tuesday.
Report, really. So, but I'm interested in hearing what you've got to say. And anyway, if you ever have a recording of Phoenix, play it. But I don't think that was Phoenix.
No, that wasn't Phoenix. Thanks, caller.
That's a local musician.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye bye. Yeah, Phoenix plays the harp. That's really the giveaway. I'm going to ask your indulgence one more time after I, of course, pick up this call, because I'm going to play you the final last chapter, or maybe it's not the last chapter, but the most recent chapter in the parking lot panic saga, the law that makes it illegal to walk into or a parking lot unless you're going through, or to park a car, and then only for 15 minutes. But first, let's take this caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio. What's your name?
Hey, it's Madison Robert.
Hey, Madison. How you doing tonight?
Good. I haven't been listening, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, well, then maybe I'm sure you can say something perfectly relevant. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I checked on the grand jury. You know, if you want to talk about the grand jury report.
Sure, if you think it's relevant to poor people and civil rights, sure.
There might be some stuff, but this is where you can get copies. www.co.santacruz. No, it's www.co.santa-cruz.
Uh-huh.
.ca.us/grand jury. And then you go to final reports, and I think they have a few years back. He said that their appointments are like 1 year or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that has something that they want to submit, you can do it right online.
Interesting.
It has to be well documented, whatever your complaint happens to be. And the more documentation you have, obviously, the better, and they're jumping at the bit to do anything.
Okay, well, you know, if Madison, in the future, you actually do a run-through on the last grand jury report and how it affects...
No, I haven't looked at it yet, but
I'm saying if you do and when you do, let us know what you find.
I figured if you did some and I did some and...
Right, well, I don't know if I'm...
There's a section on teachers. I would like teachers for class war people.
Yeah, you know, I when you do it, let's talk about it. I'm not going to be doing it, probably, because I've got my head full of local newspapers and silly city council meetings.
I can do a little quick look at it at some point here, but it would be fabulous if you see the teachers for class war girls is to tell them, can they do the teacher section?
Well, I think anybody who's interested in this show and the issues we raise here should see whether the grand jury is following it, whether they have a different view if they are following it, whether they're, you know, completely off in some other area that
he was interested in Measure K, and please check in, and Anita has more facts, so, you know, she needs to go with it.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, thanks, Madison.
Okay, but, you know, I'll call back once I look at it. Bye.
All right. Measure K, of course, is the lowest enforcement proviso for local Santa Cruz police around marijuana use by adults in private, and also marijuana sales, and also any kind of involvement with marijuana, saying that it should be the lowest priority in Santa Cruz, hopefully with an eye to taxing and regulating it through a state initiative next year. I'm not quite sure where that's at. I haven't heard anything more about it. I have talked about Measure K on the air and how it's being gutted by the city attorney in a behind-the-scenes deal with attorney Ben Rice, unfortunately, and I'm still trying to get Ben to return phone calls. Hasn't called back recently. I haven't tried him this week. He's the attorney who sort of did the deal that removed the police department requirement the option for the police officer to come into a meeting of the Measure K committee, which meets again, by the way, on November 14th at 6 o'clock, in case you're interested, in the city council chambers. But I'm hoping that we can get some authoritative information, at least for this show, about the argument that essentially killed the Measure K, that gutted the Measure K commission, that at least the argument that the city attorney presented, claiming that it violated the city charter to have the police directed in any way or even requested, inquired of, in terms of how many complaints there were about marijuana, how many citations, how many arrests, and all the details around those citations and arrests. I think it's, of course, very difficult for me to understand how the city can create a Citizens Police Review Board, which is constitutional, and yet not allow a similar Measure K commission, which has less power, but is supposedly suddenly unconstitutional. And it's seems to me like an opportunistic and politically motivated use of a irrelevant provision in the city charter, one that doesn't really adhere, doesn't really refer to what it's supposed to refer to. In other words, it is constitutional. It's not much to have a Measure K commission, But to have it removed is a step in the wrong direction, and it shows the illegitimate power of the police force and the collusion of the city attorney and the city council with the police. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I think we better nail the lid on the coffin of the parking lot panic law. Unfortunately, it's going to nail the lid on our coffin because it passed 5-1 at City Council day before yesterday for a final reading, which means that 1 month from that Tuesday, which I guess would be the 23rd of November or 22nd of November or some such thing, the law will go into force, and any police officer, any citizen, in fact, who wants to have you arrested or ticketed or told to leave a parking lot for just sitting down there, chatting with somebody else, will have that power in all 20 surface parking lots, with no warning, by the way. There's no provision for a warning, although the police, no doubt, will try to mellow this out by, you know, posting signs and gently advising people and, you know, you have no right to use your First Amendment rights. You have no right to these spaces. Come on now, be a nice citizen and give them up. Give it up for the merchants, you know, that sort of thing. That's all going to be presented to you in a gentle way, a kindler, gentler way. It used to be called friendly fascism, say. Fascism sounds extreme, but remember, they're removing, or have removed now, 5 blocks of public space, more than I think exists in what remains, if you don't count the parks, San Lorenzo Park, and even if you count Loudoun Nelson Park, because there's considerably more open space in all those parking lots, and it's used, you know, it's not used for regular activities that block cars, but it's used, or it was used. And hopefully, frankly, I hope it still will be used. I hope people will continue to do exactly what they've always done. And when the cops come and say, move along, they'll look at the cops and say, no, you move along. This is my city. This is a public area. Stick it up your you-know-what. And then when that starts to happen, of course, people will probably get citations, and then hopefully people will react. There will be protests. And who knows, maybe lawsuits or maybe just a general people-oriented reclaiming of the public space. This, of course, is my wild fantasy, since I'm afraid people are far too afraid of the police, far too busy in their own lives to even risk a citation, and to be worried. They're worried that that could, you know, lead to other problems, not to mention, not to, least of which are fines and so forth. But who knows? I could be wrong. Maybe the Iraqi war won't be going on 2 years from now with increased troops or the same number of troops or an increased war in Iran, as I'm afraid is going to be happening because people are choosing not to fight it in any direct, upfront kind of way, myself included, by the way. Anyway, here's the city council from Tuesday night. It was the last item on the afternoon agenda, even though we requested that it be held. Well, first of all, it was supposed to be held in the evening. We thought, no, they kicked it off the evening, even though they could have put it on. Emily Riley wouldn't do that. Then we asked, well, it'd be at a time certain. That is, say, it'd be at a specific time in the afternoon so people could come. They wouldn't do that. They put it at the end of the agenda, which meant it showed up around 5:45 or 6 o'clock. And there was a relatively short discussion. I'm going to play that now, and then I'm going to read a few comments from the emails I've gotten about the parking lot panic law. And then, of course, you can call in and tell me what you think about this or whatever you're thinking about.
Is the final reading of an ordinance pertaining to the use of and trespassing upon downtown city parking lots and garages. Do any city council members have any questions of staff? Seeing no one from anyone from the public like to address us on this item?
And as you can hear, there was no police report, no parking lot attendant or a worker report, no report from Public Works, no response at all to the rather obvious fact that there have been no new data presented, or even the old data from the parking garages regarding this whole issue. The city council wasn't interested in hearing anything more. They just wanted to rubber stamp it and move on. which, of course, is what they did.
Mayor Riley, I'm not going to even waste my name or what I stand for on this. You have no right to do anything in that parking lot except for make sure they're doing their laws. Make sure there's no drug pushing. Make sure there's no raping. Make sure there's no swinging their things in the public. Well, you know, you got to do this. But don't blame it on the poor. Blame it on the rich. Blame it on the coonies of Santa Cruz, California, who love to really waste the name of the poor. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I want you to notice that Michael Tomasi, for the first time in memory, did not recite his litany, which he did throughout the afternoon, that I am Michael Tomasi, king of the trolls. I raise my fist for freedom. I guess he has a long rap, which is maybe amusing the first time or two, but becomes boring and annoying after that. At this occasion, maybe it was a serious enough issue for him that he just didn't say that. He just made the quick comment, and he also didn't extend his comments, which tends to indicate maybe he recognized this was a done deal. It's all speculative on my part, but hey, it's fun to speculate.
I got rather further into this issue than I planned to by having virtue having spent about 15 hours.
This is a Chuck Huddleston speaking. He's the guy who parked his car for two successive Saturdays on Pacific Avenue, talked to people at length about the law, urged people to protest against it, and also made a very eloquent speech 2 weeks before at City Council. He actually was he was responded to by name from a couple of the council members. This time he sounds a little more nervous and he speaks a little more rapidly. This could have been because I believe the mayor cut back speaking time to 2 minutes each, even though there were only three or four speakers. I got 5 minutes because I requested in advance speaking time for an organization, Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It still wasn't enough time for me to say what I needed to say. However, most of you have heard it all several times on the air, so it's nothing new to regular listeners here of Free Radio. Again, this is Chuck Huddleston.
Well, I was down in Pacific the last couple of weekends talking to people who were willing to approach me on the basis of the signs on my car regarding this issue. It was a small sampling. It was tourists. It was kids. It was students. Unanimously, they are either confused to the reason for the need for this law or they found it was going to be irritating. And you're probably going to pass that. You've already voted for it once. But the people with whom your public and your customers will get irritated is not you. It's the police officer who has to enforce what I consider to be a petty and pointless law. All the things you mentioned that need fixing, human waste, people are not going to stop going to the bathroom. Why don't you get some porta potties and paint them, have your art community paint them up? And yes, you got to clean them up, but it's easier to clean up a porta potty than it is to clean feces off of asphalt. If you got a needle problem, get a clean needle exchange. If you got a crime or patrol problem, why don't you consider maybe a scooter patrol with an armed officer in that, a standard officer, for additional flexibility, mobility, waterproofing, and ability to stop without impeding traffic. There's answers to all of the issues that you want to solve with this parking lot ordinance. I don't think this parking lot ordinance solves any of those problems. So I ask you please to reconsider it. And if you don't, please watch it very carefully for the 6 months that you've said they're going to temporarily institute it, although, in fact, they're very seldom temporary laws or taxes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And there was no, he was mistaken, temporary institution of this law. There would be a review, but there was no sunset provision. And indeed, last time they promised a review, and no review happened. Other than, I guess, three sentences from either a couple of police officers or a public works person that there had only been two citations and 40 warnings. And that was the amount of the review. And the law had worked very well. There was no detailed report from parking lot attendants as to crimes before and after in terms of calls for service before and after the law was implemented. We're talking about the law that implemented a year ago that affected the parking garages and parking lot number 9. This time they passed the law, extended it to include all the other 19 public surface downtown parking lots, as mentioned before. I think this is the public comment section. It's really just about the only section. I think there's some very perfunctory comments by city council members, too.
Next speaker. Again, my name is Glenn Ravenolds. I overcame my feelings of this being an exercise in futility and came to provide my perspective. My father was a career diplomat, reaching the second highest career rank in the federal government before retiring. I believe my government instincts are intact. It is my strong sense the City Council is not maintaining its position in conscience in making this decision. It is not done to overturn the results of public process in the scant 1 year that has elapsed since the enactment of the previous position. A lot of people did a lot of work to get the modification that we got, and in 1 year it gets turned over. I've never seen that anywhere, anytime in my whole life.
And what he's talking about here is the fact that originally this whole law was proposed by council member and vice mayor and constitutional lawyer and Bookshop Santa Cruz manager Ryan Coonerty way back in December of 2005, I guess it was. They tried to slip it through the city council, but we were successfully able to protest. It hadn't gone through the downtown commission. But the original law was a law that covered all the parking lots and all the parking garages, which is what we have now. Actually, we have more than that. We have any potential parking lots that come up that are owned by the city in the downtown area are also included. So what happened last year was the parking lots were removed from the law because it felt that that was too broad a law to use without seeing that there was a need for it. They didn't show the need for it this year, but they decided, well, since this part of it's been around for a year, we can just expand it. Because, you know, there have been no deaths. Nobody has shot a parking lot worker. Police officers haven't beat to death a homeless person camping in the garages. So, you know, we're okay. I'm of course, using hyperbole and exaggerating. But there were no stats that showed the crime was any different up or down, that this had any real impact, this law, on the garages, or more important, on parking lot number 9. Except, actually, as you'll hear me talk about, that there was more police activity once the law was passed, or seemed to be at least more activity over the entire period surveyed. They didn't really survey the period of time when the law was passed as compared to the time it wasn't passed. They just did a whole big 18-month period from January of 2006 to June of 2007 and acted like that meant something, which when, of course, it didn't. But that doesn't matter because Coonerty, Robinson, Matthews, and Riley are a majority on the city council, with Madrigal as the dunce in the corner who jumps on board as well.
As a result, I look deeper. It is my belief that the sellable position of targeting the homeless is being done to soften up the public for a passage of an increased parking fee, that we're being targeted to draw them in to your plan so that they can not say anything when you bring up the parking fee. They'll be partners in crime, so they cannot simply turn and go against the parking fee at the same time as opposing the homeless. I think that it has almost nothing to do with homeless because our particular, or the particular lot that was of concern was lot number 9. Now it's going to hit normal people instead of homeless. It's not even going to touch them. So you can't be targeting them, and that's for certain whether they're defecating on sidewalks or not. And, I know I can even read. Plus, the people who testified as to the covered parking lot problem, the woman who testified is diagnosed retarded, even though she could present herself in public quite well. And I oppose the hiring of retarded as violating child labor laws. We have strong child labor laws in this country, and I think the hiring of retarded violates the spirit of that law, and it indicates a malformed conscience to violate the spirit of the law, even though you're abiding by the letter of the law. Thank you.
And Glenn is a homeless guy who's sometimes his mind outruns his mouth, or vice versa. And, of course, I'm not entirely clear why he thinks parking fees are involved, raising parking fees. Don't agree with them on the idea of hiring handicapped people or retarded people who, although they've gotten some flack recently and they've been directed to run around and clean around homeless people as a sort of an apparent spur to moving people along on Pacific Avenue, which I think is a way of pitting one group of disadvantaged people against another that's kind of contemptible. But that's not really what he's talking about, I don't think, although who knows what this is all coming from. And I think, you know, indeed this law, like the parking garages in the lot number 9, even though it's not specifically motivated in the same way by homeless people, the idea of people who are not engaged in to and from productive shopping activity loitering and lingering around is the group that's targeted, counterculture people, minorities, youth, and homeless people, too. Anybody who, you know, doesn't want to spend $5 to go and sit down in a cafe and you know, kick down that kind of stuff, that kind of money, they have been crowded. It's not entirely accurate to say crowded off the sidewalk, since there are nominally 10 to 15% of the sidewalk can still be sat down upon if the sidewalk is sufficiently large, wide, that is, and about 20% of the sidewalk can be used for tabling and performing. Again, if the sidewalk is more than 10 feet wide, which it isn't, of course, anywhere except on Pacific Avenue. So it essentially bans non-commercial free speech activities elsewhere in town without saying so. And if anybody ever put together a lawsuit, I suspect it might well succeed. Come on, come all ye lawyers. It is a law that goes after homeless people. It is a law that goes, but worse, it goes after, as the speaker points out, the entire community. And that's what we're going to have to deal with a month from now.
Next speaker. Hi.
Hi, my name is John O'Connor, and I'm a resident of Santa Cruz. I'm not here for any activists. I'm not an activist. I'm not necessarily speaking of homeless when I speak. I just have a feeling that this ordinance is going to backfire because I'm wondering where the people that you want to drive out of the parking lots are going to go. I fear that maybe they'll go downtown. Maybe they'll be on Pacific, or maybe they'll be along the river. I just get a sense that we're pushing people out of areas, and we don't know where they're going to go. So I just wanted to provide some commentary on that to maybe rethink what you're doing. I also think that you have the ordinance going for a couple of lots, and now you're ready to push it to every lot. Maybe take it back and think about doing a lot at a time and seeing how it works. Because, I saw the police stats, and I'm not sure how the police stats were configured, because the totals on the stats don't match. I'm not sure where all that came from and where all the crime is. I'm not seeing the crime. And I heard an officer comment about how they don't want to have to babysit people downtown. Well, if there are people that are committing crimes, why aren't the police catching them? That's my question. But I just feel like we're pushing people to a different area, and the problem's going to go elsewhere. It's going to go to the beach or wherever. So that's all I want to say.
Thank
on
you.
This issue. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, that was the argument made by the Santa Cruz Sentinel and Shanna McCord in the article she did 2 weeks ago, quoting the entire council as agreeing that this would not solve problems in the parking lots. And the question was, or at least solve the problems that were allegedly there, would simply drive them somewhere else. And I guess the theory that those who support this law is, well, if we keep driving it further and further away, it'll eventually disappear over the hills. You know, I mean, get rid of it here, get rid of it there, and eventually will be gotten rid of everywhere by a police repression or community vigilance. What problems? Well, they're mainly talking about the drug war, which I think is, as I said before, and I think most intelligent and educated people, frankly, I'd like to think they agree that drug prohibition, as we've seen with alcohol prohibition, A, it doesn't work, and B, it simply creates a huge prison industrial complex and feeds corruption in the police department and corruption abroad and corruption everywhere else, and doesn't assist families with really serious dysfunctional problems because of that are made worse by drug abuse. When we could have just like the resources that are being criminally and satanically, I have to use that word because it really is so evil, wasted over in Iraq, could create housing for all the homeless people in America, could be creating health care for everybody, but instead it's creating profits for a few large corporations and lots more weapons. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. What's your name?
Hi, Robert. It's Madison.
Hi, Madison. What's up?
Well, a homeless woman was here last night, I think, or the night before. And I have to turn my radio.
Yeah?
She said that she's been keeping track of the deaths or murders in Santa Cruz for the last several months. And they haven't been in the Satanic Sentinel. And she said she stopped counting at 18. And this was the list I got. Three on the main beach. One was a black kid that was sodomized, a little guy. A couple in the cave. Harvey West Park, three. Pogo Nip. And I don't know what else. So several women burned, which has been a repeat thing in, around here in the Bay Area. So obviously there's something that, if this is true, it's out of control. And why we aren't getting accurate reporting, and how is the community going to protect themselves if they have no knowledge?
Anyway, I think that's an important question. I know we've had Jillian Greenside on talking about the fuddled rape stats and the extremely low rate of rape convictions and investigations in Santa Cruz, ignored by Rotkin and the city council. The problem with the homeless death thing is I'd like to get, I mean, if you have names of people who've died or descriptions, I'd like to see that.
Well, little girl, she's like 5'2", and she talks a lot.
There was one girl, I think her name is Michaela.
No, this one's still alive, but she knows, she keeps track of the three, obviously.
She's the girl who spoke to you about this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why don't you try to get me the list of, you know, see if you can get a list of names, see if you can get a list of descriptions.
Well, next time I see her, she hangs out at Loudon Nelson, and she's about 5'2", kind of chubby and reddish.
Yeah, invite her to call in, come into the show and talk. But again, the problem is how much of this did she see personally or secondhand?
What number does she call you at?
Well, 423-HUFF is my number off air, 423-4833.
Yeah, I'll call her and see
if anybody has any reports.
She doesn't have a phone, but I'll find
her. If anybody has any reports about violence against homeless people, I want to hear about it. But again, I prefer.
The descriptions were pretty bad.
You know, I prefer direct reports about things, stuff you've seen, or secondhand reports about from people you know who saw it. Not, I heard that there was some violence in the Pogonip.
She really does have a finger on the street from, and she, you know, she's got a brain. It's not like she's delusional.
Well, a lot of people have brains, but you know, tongues of rumor are long and raspy. So what can you say?
Yeah, but you know, Robert, as well as I do, the word on the street is usually more valid than anything else. Have a good day.
All righty. Well, thanks, Madison. Yeah, I mean, do call in, leave that information. I mean, I've heard similar things, but I've not been able to trace it directly back. I mean, the closest I've got was a story from Damone, a Homies for the Homeless, from a friend of hers, Dell, and I never got any closer than that. But, you know, it's worrisome, and I'm concerned about it, and I know that it's prompted a number of people, I'm told, to move out of the Pogonip and even to move out of Santa Cruz. One makes me wonder if it isn't a disinformation campaign by the Downtown Association, but, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't. So let me know. 427-3772 is the phone number. We're listening now to the City Council, the parking lot panic law, which means that people will not be resting or roosting in the relatively open and safer spaces of the parking lot, but will be forced into less safe areas further away from the downtown or hidden away from the downtown. We would call her first. Hey, caller, what's your name?
Inca.
Inca?
Yeah.
Hey, Inca, what's happening?
Well, I wanted to call and ask what you thought about the light brown apple moth and the spraying, the aerial spraying, because they're going to be spraying for 6 nights in the Santa Cruz area, and they're telling people not to be outdoors, to stay inside between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m., and, you know, the whole thing about this is a new pesticide, never before been sprayed for aerial dispersal, and, you know, I was thinking about the population that lives out of doors during those times, and, you know, what's going to become of them and what's going to happen.
Right. Well, my reaction to that when I first saw the debate at City Council a couple of weeks ago was, you know, to think it's another, you know, brilliant brainstorm by blind bureaucrats. How's that for a bunch of alliteration? You know, but, you know, on the other hand, I want to be fair about this, and I noted that what's his name, Schwarzenegger, released the names of all the chemicals. It's not technically a pesticide, that it is actually, you know, pheromones to stop the moth, to confuse the moth or some such thing. It doesn't actually kill the moth. It makes it kind of loopy. You probably know more about it than I do. It sounds like you're more educated on it than I am.
Well, actually, according to the EPA, by their own definition, it is considered a pesticide.
You mean it actually causes the death directly through chemical means of the moth?
Well, through EPA's definition and the category of a pesticide, it is the same as they incorporate a pheromone, a mating disruption, the actual mating disruption process, a pesticide, because it, in their eyes, it ultimately will lead to less reproduction and therefore possibly an extermination, even though we know that pheromone releasing is an ineffective tool to control a population, because they've been spraying this pheromone in Australia, not this exact one because this product's new and untested, but they've been doing pheromone releases over the crop areas of Australia, and they've been doing it for 10 years, and it hasn't been effective. So this is something, you know, that this is a new product, and as we have seen with Australia, it's not a very effective tool for disrupting the life cycle of the moth. And it's a synthetic product. It's not, you know, we don't have little moths in little incubators, you know, giving us supplies to disrupt it. So it is actually, you know, it is a chemical synthetic product. And when you do actually break down the properties of the individual, you know, list that they released to us at the beginning of the week here, mm-hmm. you know, some of those properties are actually, you know, have hazards and say do not will contaminate the water supply, you know, is highly
toxic. Which ones are those?
Let me pull this up. It's the ammonia chloride. Let me get to the list that I have.
Well, I'm actually asking these questions partially, of course, to judge, you know, how on top of this discussion you are. I mean, I'm looking at the Scent Anal editorial here, which talks about, you know, that they released the ingredients and, quote, independent experts have weighed in and said that the active ingredients are benign and the spraying would carry with it little risk for the public. And, of course, the big deal with this is that, you know, they're concerned that the apple moth is going to, you know, seriously affect a number of California crops.
Well,
but our concern here, and I think the one you raise appropriately, is how will it affect a number of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city and thousands more in the county with no shelter? And actually, this is a perfect time for people to gather in the parking garages that night and hang out. I would think we should have a special, you know, emergency shelter station with a volunteer nurse. And frankly, this is a cynical move on my part to challenge laws that criminalize homeless people in public spaces. I mean, I got to tell you, frankly, maybe because I'm simply complacent, I'm not really worried about the spraying. But then again, you know, I might have been in Hiroshima, you know, on August 5th and not worried about the bomb, you know, so.
Well, you touched on a couple really, really important issues. You know, we have tricapril methyl ammonia chloride. Now, that, you know, is on list as being harmful, dangerous to the environment, harmful if swallowed, irritation to the skin, serious damage to eyes, very toxic to aquatic organisms, may cause long-term adverse effects to aquatic environment. Safety statements include do not touch eyes, rinse immediately, treat as a hazardous waste, avoid release in the environment. And that comes directly from people who manufacture that product, SigmaAldrich.com.
You've been following, what's your name again?
Inca.
Inca, you've been following this debate. When this argument is presented about this particular pesticide or potentially dangerous element, what is the response of the defenders?
Well, they actually openly admit that this is a new product. The company itself, Sutera, says that there's no long-term tests or studies been done on this, and that they believe it's safe, just like they are scared that the moth might cause damage. When we were actually at a CDFA meeting on Wednesday night at the University Inn on Ocean Street here, and they actually said that there was no zip, zilch, no crop damage in California, but they've erected this emergency status that gives them the authority to spray this untested biochemical pesticide, and they're trying to soft sell it as a pheromone. when in reality the website itself calls it a biochemical and EPA defines it as a pesticide.
For those who want more information on this, what websites do you recommend?
I would recommend lbamspray.info, and there's going to be a big rally and a march to stop the spray at Saturday at the clock tower at noon in downtown Santa Cruz. So I, you know, encourage, you know, people who are living outdoors to try to seek shelter, go to the parking garage, come and make a statement, because the city council did, you know, vow to take legal action to stop this, but they need support of the people. Now, I know that on some areas they're really wishy-washy, and they're at least taking a stand on this. They're not taking as aggressive of a stand as we would like, but at
what would you like?
Well, we would like, you know, an immediate halt to this, so to set up to put an immediate injunction to challenge the, you know, the status of this as an emergency status.
And also, what did council do instead?
Well, they're working on things. You know, since it's a time thing and we have legal restraints by CDFA, they're, you know, trying to play their legal hand to the best that they feel is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm not an attorney and I don't know legal processes, I can't really comment, but it seems
now, this
as though
was sprayed
people
yesterday.
Want more now.
This
and
was sprayed yesterday in Monterey, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing about it is when you look at the plan treatment maps to the areas that were actually covered, they didn't cover what they said they were, and today's treatment map looks like, you know, they're overlapping. So I called this morning CDFA and said, hey, you know, why wasn't the whole job completed? You had the plan to do this whole area, and you only finished maybe 30% of it. And they told me that one of the planes was grounded. It never left the ground because of problems. And one plane in the middle, in the air at 2:30 a.m. was called down. Now, this is planes that have been sitting, waiting to do this mission, waiting to do this spray operation, and to have such faulty equipment and one to be removed from the air in the middle of its operation. We have red safety flags going up all over the place.
Is this a move by your Al-Qaeda chapter to destroy and terrorize us as we attempt to spray these moths? Tell us the truth.
Well, you know, there's an interesting element to that. When you actually research where the money's coming from, Homeland Security allocated $65 million towards this moth project. And it's kind of interesting that when Bush was running for re-election, A.G. Kawamura, the Secretary of State of Agriculture in California, actually donated the personable maximum contribution of $20,000 to the Bush re-election campaign. So when you actually start to realize and look behind this, coupled with the fact that there is no moth damage, they're taking an extreme overreaction to a moth that, you know, as far as UC Davis etymologist professor says, has been here for years. Local farmers have said they've been dealing with this particular moth for years. And
so,
now they've created this emergency status, which allows them to bypass all these environmental, you know, reviews and environmental checkpoints.
Now, in Monterey, I know there were this it was sprayed not just yesterday, but in some days before, right?
Right. In the beginning of September, for 4 days, the area was sprayed, and a number of people went to the emergency room. One infant baby was hospitalized for severe respiratory problems. So, you know, there are this is a test product, you know, and it's not a one-time application. Written on their permit is they have the permit set to spray every 30 days until 2010 and beyond. The actual budget on the state level is in place till 2019, but they are planning to spray every 30 days, up to every 30 days, and they're not absolutely coming out saying how often they want to spray, but their plan is already set for every 30 days.
So what was the reaction in Monterey yesterday? Were there protests? Were people, you know, hiding in cellars? What was the deal?
Well, a lot of people left town, and there was a Get Prepared meeting down across on Cottonwood Ave, and there was a Get Prepared meeting, so people are catching samples of the spray, learning how to protect the things outdoors, because we're told that we're supposed to wash everything down. If we have clothes outside, they should be washed again. So, you know, these are statements coming directly on how to prepare from CDFA, but there are also people there who are taking extra precautionary measures. Because, again, this is a test product. It's only about 30 to 60 days old. It has never been used for an aerial disbursement before. We are the guinea pigs.
So, Inca, would you be interested in contacting the Homeless Service Center tomorrow and asking what kind of protection they're going to provide for homeless people?
Oh, yeah, definitely. What number should I call?
I believe the number of the Homeless Service Center is 458-6020. And you can then call me on the Huff line and let me know what they have to say. They don't usually answer my calls.
Uh-huh.
At 423-4833, and I'll pass it on Sunday when I come back for a morning show.
Great.
And we can talk about what happened. You can also, if you want, give a report on Sunday as to how the Saturday protests went and who, you know, you might want to combine this with an anti-war rally, since Saturday, of course, is a day when there's going to be a lot of anti-war rallying.
Nice. In Santa Cruz here?
Yeah.
Okay, because I did see one, and I did send out an email to one. But, yeah, I will definitely take your advice. I will follow up with your suggestions on the phone calls, and thank you for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for being concerned about the issue, Inga.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And, again, we return to that old chestnut, the Santa Cruz City Council, and the issue of how many public spaces can we criminalize once we have a conservative city council? It looks like the answer is lots and lots. And in this case, lots of lots.
Our next speaker's been given 5 minutes. He's speaking for an organization.
Council members, members of the community, Robert Norris speaking for Huff. This is a law that makes it illegal to walk into and linger in a parking lot for any time whatsoever at 5 square blocks of downtown space, unless you're walking directly through or you have a vehicle or parking a car, and then only for 15 minutes can you stay. Commonplace natural Santa Cruz socializing becomes a $100-plus crime a month from now if you pass this law. Talking, resting, sitting in one's vehicle to finish the homework, listening to your car radio for more than 15 minutes, lying down under a tree at all, and there are plenty of trees in some of the parking lots, are all gone to create Coonerty's safer, more appealing downtown. Sterilizing Santa Cruz to make it more appealing to those frightened of Santa Cruz street life. Here we are again. Last year, the Downtown Commission, the CPVAW, and even this council voted this same law down. It said no lots, too broad, too sweeping, no organized facts to justify so fundamental a change. CPVAW Chair Greenside voted against the law because the police presented no facts at the CPVAW hearing. This year, they didn't bother to go to the CPVAW. But the CPVAW's position still stands. They opposed the law.
CPVAW is the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, by the way. Since one of the alleged issues here, or at least perceived issues, was the unwelcoming or ominous environment in the garages, to have strange people lingering around, making vulnerable people, specifically women, feel uncomfortable. That was the basis for which this was taken to the CPVAW. They said, it's too broad a law. We do not support this in the lots. And they never changed their position. And so Coonerty never brought it back to this commission, but simply bypassed it.
So you're voting against your own commission here. Last year, 16 people spoke against this law, including three organizations, the ACLU, Huff, and the Cabrillo College Democrats. And four people spoke in favor. One of those four, Sheila Coonerty, this time left her house at night 2 weeks ago to speak against this law. Last year, Mayor Riley not only voted against this law, she voted against including the lots, but you also voted against including parking lot number 9. Mayor Riley's frowning, but I checked the agenda. You can check it yourself. What has changed? Check it out.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I checked it out afterward, and I was correct. It's interesting. Riley wanted to have no lots included, but she was overruled by four council members in a 4-3 vote. And she voted for including parking lot 9 in the final vote some weeks later. But in the initial proposal, she voted against it.
More pressure from the same determined downtown association spearheaded by Keith Holtaway, who's here, but no new facts. Anecdotal tales from two parking lot employees trotted out by the bureaucrats pushing this law from Public Works, but no new facts. The same chorus of unsubstantiated claims of a public safety threat in the lots, but no facts. Sergeant Flippo and Lieutenant Escalante tell us again this law would be a useful tool for the police. Sure, So would a no loitering law on the sidewalk. So would a lot of other laws. But they aren't necessarily things that, on balance, we want in this community. No facts to indicate safety problems. No facts to indicate a crime wave in the parking lots. No facts to indicate a 20-fold expansion of forbidden zone downtown. That's what you are, in fact, proposing. Last year, you said no. You did include one parking lot number 9 on Elm Street. That's the homeless lot, of course, the place where people were least likely to complain because they are most powerless. It was there you banned public gatherings, a place that was once there were once memorial bushes to sit on under a shady tree. No more. That's illegal. This is the lot facing the regular homeless meal at the Elm Street Church. For the last year, police have been able to experiment with parole violation stops, warnings. They regularly park a police car across the street from the meal, surveilling the seedy, and of course making it illegal for them to eat their meal in the parking lot, as many of them used to do. Instead, they're all crammed onto the sidewalk, strung down the walk between the church and the Cafe Pergolesi, and of course it's illegal for them to sit down on the sidewalk, thanks to your other downtown ordinances, because they're within 10 feet of a building. It's strange, though. Police have no stats, no facts for this lot, this one lot, number 9, the only lot where we have a law that actually was put into place. We can have a comparative sense of what went down. In this one lot, the homeless people were, in fact, the laboratory rats. We can see what effect the law had before and after. Yet how strange. The police didn't bother to give us the before and after results. You required this review last year when you passed the law. They have not provided it yet in any meaningful way. The few grudging stats the police finally gave do show one thing. Lot number 9 had the most police activity of any of the lots. Is that because of that new law? Can we expect the same heightened level of police activity in the other 19 lots they'll hammer up the no trespassing signs on a month from now? Perhaps people, ordinary people, not protesters or advocates, just ordinary residents and tourists don't find it welcoming to be told to keep walking. They don't like to be told to leave their cars and move to the cafes, throw your money in as you go by. Perhaps they won't find it warm and inviting or safe and appealing to be warned to leave traditionally public spaces that have been open since they were children and before. Warnings are no longer required in this change of the law.
Time is up.
You just get $100 tickets and, of course, selective enforcement of those tickets.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address us? Seeing no one, I'll bring the close the public comment portion of this item, bring it back to the council. Brian?
I want to move final adoption of this ordinance. I want to speak briefly to a couple of the comments. There's a lot of, I think, a lot of concern and a lot of thoughtful comments, but I'm not sure that the facts bear it out. We had the parking garage ordinance for a year. There were two citations, parking garage ordinance plus lot 9 for a year. There were two citations under this ordinance. There wasn't people being pushed out of the garages and the lots into downtown, ruining downtown or towards the high school or towards the neighborhood.
And actually, he has no basis for saying any of this because no figures were given about this. There was no indication whether there was increased ticketing somewhere else where people were removed from parking garages or told to leave. It's true that when told to leave, people, you know, would rather leave than take citations. And police were probably told, don't give tickets, give them warnings and tell them to leave. And in fact, the earlier version of this law, the one that we've been living under for the last year, actually mandates that there be warnings before citations. The new law, which goes into effect in a month, says no warnings are required. So Coonerty is wrong. There is no there's no evidence that this law has worked in the sense that it is I cut back on police work, or that it has cut back on the number of stops, or it has cut back on the number of problems, except the anecdotal evidence and testimony of police officers and parking lot workers. I suspect that there probably has been less activity in the parking garages and that parking lot number 9 I don't know about. But if you make a certain area no trespassing zone and you eliminate all activity, you'll probably have less criminal activity generally, where criminal activity is defined including such things as camping or selling small quantities of marijuana, You'll probably get less of that because people don't want to be seen in an area that says no trespassing if they're likely to be cited for that alone. And that's the rationale for the law this year, and there was a rationale last year. The problem with that rationale, of course, is it also criminalizes everything else and makes us all run around following a police department, police mentality, drug war prohibition priority, when in fact all this is supposed to be the lowest priority and not the highest priority. Measure K makes use in private of marijuana the lowest priority, or you know, any involvement with marijuana. But I believe the drug war generally is, and or at least should be, the lowest priority, because it just, as I've said before earlier in the program, it just doesn't work. You know, it's a real problem. It has to be addressed, but you have to start talking about real solutions and not simply, you know, arming the police more, sending in more police patrols, increasing the penalties, increasing the jails. It's not only stupid, it's vicious and creates a more vicious result. Again, Councilmember Ryan Coonerty, the brainchild of who's this law was his brainchild.
It set a standard for behavior in the parking garages and the parking lots, and I think by all accounts, by the accounts of the people who are working in the garages day in and day out, by the people who are working downtown and parking in the garages, by people who are visiting downtown, that it made the parking garages and Lot 9 a more safe place to be.
We don't really have that account, however, because we weren't really given it. I think we have a caller here. Hi, caller, you're on Free Radio. What's your name?
Oh, hi, Robert. Can you go into
Madison,
more on your ideas for ending the drug war but fixing the drug problem? I'd like to know what your ideas are.
Sure, but we're talking about the parking lots right now, in a bit. And more of the parking lot situation. Again, the idea of Coonerty wants a standard of behavior, or actually, we should actually say a standard of non-behavior, since he essentially wants to empty the lots of any kind of non-parking behavior, which to me is directly antithetical to the spirit of Santa Cruz. And, of course, it also will eliminate such things as food not bombs unless they choose to try to get permits and any other kind of informal social activity that happens in the parking lots. And I hope it doesn't. I hope folks stand firm and say, forget it, you know, bite me and ticket me. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Is this Scope It Out, Scott Graham?
Yes. So I was wondering, has the Sentinel done an editorial about this parking lot deal?
Yeah, it actually has.
And did you believe what they said?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Their editorial, I'd have to review it, but I suspect I was probably at odds with most of what the editorial said.
But then when they talk about the light brown apple moth spraying, you think that, oh, they're telling the truth.
Well, I didn't say they were telling the truth.
Well, you seem to, like, side with the Sentinel when that caller called about it.
No, I didn't side with the Sentinel. No, I didn't. But I asked some questions, which actually I got some good answers for from the caller.
Well, to me, you know, it's like this stuff they're going to spray. That's like something that, you know, you might spray at a frat party or something, you know? To get all the guys all wound up. And the fact that this stuff is untested, how do we know it's not going to affect human males, the way it affects the moth male?
Well, maybe we should start spraying it at the downtown association.
And, you know, it may, like, you know, all of a sudden there may be this big rise in sexual assaults after they spray this stuff.
Now, wait a minute. This is supposed to eliminate that by making it less likely for there to be mating. Scott, aren't you getting this backwards?
No. What it just is, it makes them think that it makes them, supposedly, the thing is, it's supposed to make the male moth think there's a female in heat nearby. So they fly all over looking for this female in heat, and they get so exhausted that when the females are ready to mate, the males are all too exhausted to mate anymore.
This sounds like a new party drug. What do you think?
That's what I said. It sounds like something you would spray at a frat party or something. You know, it's like it's a very weird thing to, you know, that we in Monterey County are guinea pigs for the, you know, it's much like when in World War II, when the Army and the Navy put a bunch of radioactive material in the subways in New York City to see what the effects were for people, you know, if there would be, like, any immediate effects of people walking by this radioactive material all day long for several weeks. And so
why not? You don't want to. I mean, these are civilians. We can, you know, we won't be losing any valuable soldiers.
Right. But, you know, I mean, as far as, like, this parking lot thing, like I said the last time I called about it, it's basically the police fishing in a barrel ordinance. You know, it's like there's all everything that the police will cite and the council members will cite that they don't want people doing in these parking lots is already illegal. So if the police don't want to spend the time to actually bust people for the things that are already on the books, so what they do is they have the council make a law that makes it so that they can just arrest them for being there.
Or alternately, it makes it so that we're afraid to be there because we're afraid we might be arrested.
Right. You know, and so it's...
I'll grant that to the Downtown Association. That's what they really want. They want to clear away groups of people they consider to be frightening to conservative tourists. And also, there is, I think, the overly exaggerated concerns about violence downtown coming from groups of people, whereas I don't think that's where the violence comes from. On occasion it does, but I mean, I think generally speaking, this is going after a flea with several sledgehammers, you know. I mean,
right.
So, yeah, I mean, the real question though, Scott, is what can the community do about this? I mean, are we screwed? Are we stuck with it? What's the deal?
Well, I guess until somebody that really wants to fight it gets arrested for it, nothing, you know. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a big enough cause for numbers of people to show up at city council and complain about it. And more than likely, even if they had, the council had already made up their mind that they were going to do this, you know.
Well, Riley was influenced to support, and the 4-3 vote, at least preparation for legal action against the spraying of the light brown apple moth pheromone/pesticide deal, right?
Yeah.
So I think numbers can have an impact. And I'm wondering, what are you going to be doing next Halloween, Scott, in the Triple Fine Zones? I hope you aren't going to be hanging around with your gang colors.
Oh, I'm going to be out handing out Triple Fines to people.
Oh, are you going to be with Tony Madrigal keeping an eye on the Blue Coats?
No, I mean, the last year I think the police outnumbered the number of people downtown. So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be the same this year. It's like,
well, but that would be an opportunity to do some spraying. How about some light blue police moth? No. All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Scott, and keep tuned. I want more accounts.
Okay. Well, oh, yeah, the other thing you called me about the other day, the thing about, you know, the council's trying to limit the time of people speaking, even if they're speaking for a group and all that kind of stuff. And
right. They required me this time when I was speaking.
To give them a list of people in the room that weren't going to talk.
I had to give a list of names of people who were not going to speak because I was speaking for them.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, if you just spoke for yourself, you get 3 minutes?
Right. No, 2 minutes on this.
Two
account.
Minutes. Yeah. Okay. So you had to find another 1.5 people to sign up or something.
Well,
in order to get 5 minutes, you had to find...
I don't think this provision meets with the Brown Act, but what I said was, I will talk to people who can't come, who I will be speaking for, and I got them to agree to that, even though it seemed to go against what they originally said, was they wanted people who were in the room who weren't speaking.
Right. I mean, the council has done stuff like this in the past. I think when Fitzmaurice was mayor at one time, he tried doing this, and there was one time when, you know, it used to be that if a group was speaking, sometimes they'd have, like, more than one person come up and talk. And then sometimes those same people would go and do their 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever they were given.
Right.
And Fitzmaurice kind of did away with that if you spoke as part of the group, if you were one of the speakers for the group, you couldn't also speak as an individual. But to make people say that there's somebody in the room that's not going to talk because I get 5 minutes, you know, that's kind of outlandish.
Well, it's all in the interests of saving time and staff money, Scott. Don't you understand we're in a budget crunch?
Yeah, well, because these assholes spend money like a bunch of drunken pirates. That's why.
Arr.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Have a good evening, Robert.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, here's Ryan Coonerty giving the final his final bow as his law passes 5-1.
I think when the council had concerns about expanding it to all lots, part of it was to see how it worked in the parking garages. And I think we can say that it, in the garages, it was a success for setting a standard for behavior.
He doesn't say why he feels this. And, of course, he ignores the fact that the police refused to give the stats in the one lot where there actually was some analysis, you could tell, because there was a before and an after. The law was instituted last summer, and the stats covered from before last summer. But they covered the entire period. They weren't split up, so you couldn't really tell what the story was. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Ryan Coonerty, at least on tape.
Hi, Robert.
Madison, call number four. What's up?
No, number three.
Nope,
the
number
guy
four,
who
actually
just called about the moth.
Yeah.
How did we get... This is a nuclear-free county. Remember we did that in the 80s?
Yeah.
How did we get that? Why don't we have an apple moth briefing?
Well, by the time we did, I think all the apple moths would have been sprayed. But, you know, I mean, you can get... it's the answer to that, the short answer is it's a state spraying deal. And in order to stop the state spraying, you have to either defund it, get the governor to revoke it, get a court to enjoin against it, or simply occupy the airfields and keep the planes on the ground. Now, that's one way to go, but that
would
be...
We don't have a judge in Santa Cruz County that will injunct it? Come on.
You better find that judge. Thanks,
or
Madison.
Or Inca. She knows everybody.
All right. Again, finishing up with Ryan Coonerty's rather flimsy arguments. I've invited him on the air to talk, but for some reason he just doesn't feel it necessary. Of course, obviously, it isn't necessary. He's got his law, and... He hasn't done any kind of survey or poll in Santa Cruz except among the merchants and the Sentinel and the police and city employees. We'll see who this is. Hi, who's calling in?
Robert, I wanted to clear up...
This sounds like the infamous talk show host Louis LaFortune.
Unfortunately, you've misdiagnosed the voice.
Zounds! It's another Free Radio scoundrel. What's the deal?
Well, I wanted to clear up something about the pheromone spray that's being proposed for Santa Cruz County.
Go for it.
One of your callers thought that perhaps this spray would affect human males, and the answer to that question is no, it will not. The active chemicals being sprayed, I don't want to talk about the inactive stuff because it's, you know, that's a whole different ball of worms, but the active ingredients, and there are two of them, are very specific pheromone chemicals that will confuse the male moths and make it unable for them to find the female moths. Because the moths fly around in the dark, they need some way to find each other, and that method is by perfume. Basically, pheromones are akin to Chanel No. 5. And the male apple moths go around trying to find the female apple moths that are wearing female apple moth perfume. And if you flood the world with female apple moth perfume, then the male moths have no idea where the females are. And essentially, breeding takes place as a result of a lucky encounter. And anyway, it will not affect you. In fact, you won't smell it at all.
So you don't oppose it as far as you don't think it's a dangerous phenomenon.
I have some concerns about the inert chemicals in the spray. There is some controversy about exactly what is in that in terms of inactive components, and it has not been tested. So I have some concerns about it. But I also know that if this spraying program does not succeed, then the California Department of Food and Agriculture will proceed to lethal pesticides in order to kill the moths, and I would rather avoid that if at all possible. I mean, I was living in the Santa Clara Valley when they sprayed malathion and a whole bunch of other crap on us in the middle of the night, and that's horrible. You don't want that stuff around. So if they can possibly control it with something that is not toxic at all, and that has yet to be proven, I would rather they do that. So that's my position. Thanks for the opportunity to clear that up.
Sure, Dennis. Before you go, you're coming on the air in about 40 minutes. Will this subject be coming up at all in any part of your show?
Probably not. I do have a news program at 9 o'clock, but I don't typically do interactive radio. It's a straight newscast. So.
Okay, but I appreciate the update here.
Yeah.
And if you have any more thoughts, please feel free to call in.
Thank you, Robert. Bye.
All right, Dennis. That's Uncle Dennis. He does From the Cream to the Dregs. Starts at 8 o'clock, runs to 11 every Thursday night. So check him out when this is over. Lots of nostalgic music and some news reporting as well, particularly around environmental topics. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Who's calling?
Oh, this is Scott again.
Uh-oh.
Call number two.
Yes.
I just want to rebut what Dennis just said, because he said in his statement that it's untested. So how is he so sure that the active ingredients will not affect humans? I don't see how he can say that he's concerned about the inert ingredients because they're untested. But the active ingredients are also untested, and they're untested on humans. So for him to be so sure of it, I think he must be receiving kickbacks from the whatever company, Monsanto or whoever the hell
is making this stuff. What about his – well, actually, I've got a couple questions. But my real question here, since this is the theme of my show, is what do you suggest homeless people do? Maybe go to Emily Riley's bakery and hang out there during the spraying? I mean,
I would suggest that they, there's this guy from the state that's been coming for these talks, and then there's Arnold who's in favor of it because he said, oh, let's release the formula because let's show everybody there's nothing wrong with this stuff. If the state is going to do this and there's going to be people outdoors that have no shelter, the state better provide it for them. They better open up the armory. They better open up high school auditoriums, gymnasiums up at the campus, anything that they have any kind of control over.
But we know they won't. Now the question is, what should the homeless people do?
They should contact all these people and say that, and also contact lawyers and say that they're going to sue.
This is the most ridiculous, unlikely scenario I've ever heard of. The question is, in terms of what people can actually do.
I guess hide under bridges.
It's illegal to be under a bridge. Well, no. You can hide under a bridge, but if you're on the levee after dark, you're history. I guess they'll be sprayed during the daytime, perhaps.
Well, you get under a freeway bridge then.
See if that's. I think that's illegal too. Anywhere near the San Lorenzo River after dark,
you're thinking of the freeway bridge over the river. I'm talking about freeway bridges out in Capitola.
All right. Well, so a migration to Capitola might be in order. Maybe we can go to the Capitola Mall. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
All right. Maybe we can get
mall walkers.
Yeah, mall walkers. That's good. Not night walkers, but mall walkers.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well.
But anyway, I just don't understand how Dennis can say that the active ingredients.
What about the pesticide danger of there being a more lethal spraying if this one is blocked?
Well, I mean, the thing is that the only reason they know these things are around is because they've set up traps around the county, and that moths go into these. They actually put something in it that attracts the moths. I don't know if it's the pheromones or what, but they put something in there that attracts them. Then once they come inside this little trap, it kills them. Now, they can hang those all over, if they're concerned about the apple trees, they hang them in the apple trees. They can be hanging them everywhere instead of doing an aerial spraying where you spray everything.
Don't you think you're valuing human life a little too highly,
it's
Scott?
It's not just human life. It's everything that's out there. Because if they do, like Dennis said, if they do proceed to an even more lethal type of poison, and do that aerial spraying of that, it's going to kill insects that are considered beneficial insects. It's not going to just zero in on these moths.
Unfortunately, not the large insects that run the cities and counties. Thank you, Scott.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, the final chapter of the Coonerty parking lot law, from which we have strayed a bit.
Again, this is not a target of homeless people. This is a target of people who are engaging in criminal activity in lots.
And actually, it's a target of people who aren't engaging in criminal activity, but who might be engaging in criminal activity. We have yet another caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is Uncle Dennis.
Oh, my goodness. Uncle
Dennis.
Call number two. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yes, call number two. I actually did quite a bit of research on this, and while one would not probably gain any benefit from inhaling tremendous amounts of the pheromone, it's not necessarily all that toxic. And the second thing is the
based on what? Wait a minute, Dennis. Based on what? The claim you said it's untested.
Laboratory tests on rats and mice.
And you have any places where people can go to get this information?
It's not an easy thing to find. You have to go into the into a bunch of scientific literature searches. You have to actually look up the specific chemicals that are involved. But
any chance of
your
bottom
line? The bottom line on the research is that the active ingredient is not all that toxic. First of all, second of all, the active ingredient is encapsulated inside a small micro balloon. Okay, a little plastic ball, about a thousandth of an inch across, is what contains the active ingredient. So when they spray it, the active ingredient isn't actually exposed to the atmosphere. It's inside this little plastic ball where it evaporates extremely slowly out of that little ball, so it'll last a week. That's the whole idea behind this pheromone encapsulation process, is that, you know, these little micro balls release the pheromone over a period of a week. This
Are you willing
this
to do an
pheromone.
Experiment? Can we spray this on you, Dennis?
I'm not willing to go that far right now, but I would say that people who hear the airplanes coming should put up an umbrella, get under a bridge, go into a building, go to Denny's, get out of the air while the spraying is going on. Once the spray hits the ground, it's not going to, it probably isn't going to harm you.
Just don't lie down on the ground, I guess, huh?
Well, like I say, these little micro balloons that contain the active ingredient, they're like dust, and the active ingredient doesn't, you'd have to actually smash the little micro balloon to get the active ingredient on you, and then that stuff is, it's an oil. It's an oily substance. And it's basically a perfume. So while I've done the research and I found out that, you know, the pheromone chemicals themselves are not all that toxic, I don't know what the composition is of the spray that they're actually spraying out of the airplane. And that's why I don't really want this spraying to go on until they can figure out, you know, what are the other ingredients that are in the spray?
The issue is what can be done to stop it, and it looks like, as I said, occupying the airfields may be the way to go. Will you be leading the charge?
No, I'm going to be busy getting ready for my show. I have to finish up with my research here.
You're too busy. I see. All right. Well, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Robert. See you in a few.
All right. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is the show where you get to speak back to the expert or supposed expert who calls in to speak back to you. I don't spend this much time on these issues, but this is an issue in which people are very active, very concerned, and does affect and impact homeless people. But I'm damned if I'm not going to get through this parking lot panic law, because I'm really sick of it. But we'll allow a quick caller. If this is Scott Graham again, I warn you, Scott, it's not going to be a long call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling number two. And
this is Inca?
This is Inca.
And this is the Inca that's going to call the Homeless Service Center tomorrow, right?
Yes, definitely.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I don't usually make promises that I can't keep.
Fair enough.
I will commit to doing that for sure.
I
have a couple of points, okay? Two, Dennis has his facts wrong. This particular product, and maybe he's researched other products, but this particular research product is supposed to linger around for 30 days. That's what the manufacturer MSD states. And the reason
that they are going to spray and the permit is set to spray every 30 days is because that's when this product actually goes to disintegration, and we're not even sure disintegration. It becomes ineffective to the moth. Actually, the microcapsule that encapsulates the active ingredients has not actually been proven to biodegrade. It has not been proven effectively in biodegrading at this point. Okay, so there's another issue. And two other issues is that the propaganda is that when we deal with any issue, like you're dealing, you know, specifically with a homeless issue, and my passion right now is the spray issue. But when we deal with issues and we're dealing with state government and bureaucracy, we need to be so careful not to fall into their paradigm, either to be sprayed or to be sprayed, to either prohibit camping or to prohibit camping. These are not the choices that are acceptable. We do not have to play by their rules. We do not accept the choices for these bans on the homeless and where they can and can't stand, sleep, where people can sit, stand, and sleep. We do not need to play by their choices. And with this spray, we do not need to play with this fear, this propaganda, to either spray pesticides or to spray pesticides. There are other safe, reasonable options.
So, Inka, what are you going to do to stop the spraying when the judge says we're spraying anyway?
Well, for one, I'm leaving town. And two, I'm seriously considering moving. Straight up, because this is a long-term project. And, you know, I know Dennis, and I respect him in some other fields. Where in this area, I feel that he's just kind of missing the boat here. You know, we're dealing with a pheromone release that is scheduled repeatedly for several years. The manufacturers themselves say there has been no long-term studies on what will happen. We're dealing with pheromones. We're dealing with micro, sub-micro particles that actually get lodged into the fatty tissues of our cells. And unlike larger-sized particles, these micro particles are difficult to release. The body cannot purge these. So those are just some couple of issues, but really we need to get out of this paradigm whether to spray or not to spray. Those are not the only choices. There are effective choices that have been used around the world to deal with this.
So the choice is to pray or to flee. That's apparently what you're telling me at the moment.
No, the choice is not to succumb to the fear from the CDFA that the only way we're going to deal with this is to aerial spray.
Well, yesterday they sprayed Monterey. I didn't see anybody occupying the airfields down there. You know,
like as far as a lockdown or to take direct action, is that what you're...
Well, what are you going to do to stop the spraying? You know, I mean, I think the educational campaign is a great idea. I think this debate is educational. But, you know, if your response is, oh, I'll just pack up and leave, that is not going to obviously deal with the issue for many thousands of people who can't leave.
Well, just because one person chooses to leave because they happen to have asthma and long-term respiratory problems doesn't mean that they can't still continue to fight this, because when you look at CDFA's plan, their plan is to start here. They're next going to go to Oakland. They're next going to go to San Francisco. Their long-term range is to go up into Oregon and Washington. We are on the front lines. This sets precedence to any other insect that comes along that we should just aerial spray. You know, it's like the moth has caused no damage. This is not an emergency. There is no damage in California. We do not have to play by CDFA's rules that this is only choices to spray or to spray.
Got your point, Inka.
I never call in twice to any talk show, but I just wanted to put things. I challenged Dennis to a debate on his show next Wednesday. And two, the other thing is, off the record, a city council member, because I directly asked one of them, and I'm not at liberty to say who, and I said, what are we going to do about the homeless when this happens? And they said, well, you know, maybe they should just start camping out, and that'll get more media attention on this, and maybe some people will get off their butts and take action. And I thank you for your time.
Yeah, Inka, before you go, remember that tonight is Dennis' show. So, and since you regard this as a serious issue, you might want to, even though he has stated, does he have a second show on Wednesday? I thought he only has one on. I think he has this is his only show coming up tonight.
Oh, I see.
So you might want to encourage him to open up part of his show to this discussion, since it does seem to be eliciting so much interest. And such, I'm going to be cutting off calls on this subject myself, because I've got other things to talk about, not that it isn't an important topic.
Well, thank you for all your efforts in all areas.
Thanks again, Inka.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. The final words of Ryan Coonerty, boy vice mayor.
Nothing to do with the homeless population one way or another. I've forgotten what I was going to say in response to the comments. And I think that, the final thing is that Is there a problem in the lots? Yes, and by, I think it was Robert Norris's own account, he said there are only two violent assaults a month in the lots under this thing, and two violent assaults in parking garages, in parking lots downtown is unacceptable. So one violent assault a month in parking lots downtown is unacceptable. So I do think that in and of itself, much less the feces, the needles, to all the other aspects, requires action. And so I do think it is important that we do this.
And, of course, this begs the question of whether there are many times more assaults elsewhere and whether you're going to stop those assaults by making it illegal for people to use the lots except for parking. When these assaults have occurred in the past, whether they have anything to do with people parking cars or not parking cars. He's got his own agenda, he has his own conclusions, and he's not going to stop to consider the facts. He's simply going to, you know, take what comes in and twist it in the direction that he wants it to go. Now you might say, well, aren't I doing the same? No, I actually would like to know. I mean, if there is a showing of a real crime problem in the parking lots specifically, or the garages, I'd like to know about it in a clear way. And I might not agree with the solutions. Different solutions have been proposed. But we need to see what's really going on and not simply, give the police and police-orchestrated downtown merchant and neighborhood associations the kind of right-wing agenda that they're reaching for, which involves criminalizing everybody in these areas who doesn't jump to their feet and leave the parking lot in 15 minutes. I mean, it's so un-Santa Cruzan. It's just... It disturbs me.
Thank you. Second. So we have Coonerty Matthews. Any other discussion to the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Passes 5-1 with Mr. Coonerty absent.
And actually, it's Mr. Rotkin absent, as I think Riley later corrects. So that's that. Parking lot panic law is now part of the law. Because the community didn't put down enough pressure, because the Brown Berets didn't show up, because the people who are concerned about racial profiling didn't put in enough effort, because the students who spoke against this last time weren't present this time, perhaps because everybody's tired of the issue, maybe because Lynn Robinson has replaced Tim Fitzmaurice, who, for whatever his other faults are, voted against this issue a year ago. We'll see where it goes. Here's some more from the City Council. At the same council meeting, from some items on the consent agenda that I talked about, see if they interest you. They're interested me.
That were pulled from the consent agenda. Item number 9, to set the dates for annual advisory body interviews, appointments, and reappointments.
Yes, council members. This has a listing of different commission members and dates, which seems fine. However, there's one commission that's missing here. The only commission that was ever actually authorized by an initiative by the city voters, even though ignored and sabotaged by this council, the Measure K Commission, which has essentially been gutted behind closed doors by legal action through the city attorney's office against the measure. But it still meets. And my question is, though we have a somewhat enfeebled Measure K Commission, three members, Cynthia Matthews, Lynn Robinson, and Tony Madrigal, have failed for the last year to abide by the voters' will and indeed the wording of the law, which requires that people be appointed to this commission so there can be a determination of the lowest priority for marijuana enforcement, which the voters of this town want done, and which they don't believe, you know, is really happening unless there's an effective oversight, of course, which there isn't, because this committee has not only gutted the Measure K, this board has not only gutted the Measure K Commission, but it has also, of course, destroyed the Citizens Police Review Board. But nonetheless, your responsibilities under the law are to make these appointments.
Yes.
and you haven't done that. So I'm wondering if you can add to
thank
this
you. Yes, and Mr. Norsett,
yes.
Thank you for very much for bringing that up, because it was actually in my announcements to mention that we have three vacancies, which are direct city council member appointments on the Measure K Oversight Committee, and I neglected to read that, so I apologize. You're absolutely right, and people are welcome to submit their applications, and maybe they'll be appointed before January, and if not, we'll certainly hear them at interviews in January. Thank you.
Right, I'm not quite finished, and I appreciate, however, that that addition. It's also suggested that there be information provided to community TV for this purpose, for display, and I encourage you, in fact, I think it should be a part of this measure, and perhaps it is, based on your announcement, that the Measure K Commission will also be advertised on community TV looking for applications, bimonthly media release broadcast through email and fax distribution lists, and advertising continuously on the city website. I don't think the fact that you refused to put this measure on the ballot a year ago and sabotaged it this year is justification for violating the law as it currently exists. So I encourage you to go ahead and do that, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, hi.
Mayor Riley, City Council. I'm Mike Tomasi, King of Marijuana. And you know something?
And unfortunately,
I sat on the Santa Cruz Police Department and smoked that pot. They decided they weren't going to bother with me.
Mr. Tomasi,
it was the lowest on the priority. Am I doing something wrong?
No, Mr. Tomasi, I need to ask you to please stick to the topic, which is not the legalization of marijuana or the oversight of that, but rather the dates, setting the dates for annual advisory body interviews, appointments, and reappointments.
Well, I set all these dates, young lady, and you know something? I love you. There's a few of you gentlemen that I don't like, but you know something? Emily Riley, I love you, you know, and you can jump down my tokus anytime you want. Thank you, and I love you.
A little risque there.
Anyone else want to speak on this item? A motion to approve, Cynthia?
Yes, I'll make a motion to approve with the addition that was mentioned here.
Thank you. I'll second that. Any other discussion to the motion? We have four votes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, passes 5-0 with Rotkin and Madrigal absent. Number 10, the City Council Policy 6.12 regarding closed session. This
right.
is a motion to adopt the revised policy pertaining to closed session authorized by the Brown Act. Mr. North.
Yeah, I think it's important the community know what its rights are and what its powers are with respect to the closed session, which is a very powerful weapon in the hands of the City Council. I mean, I mentioned before the Measure K action took place in closed session. You instructed the attorney to proceed without any public debate. So it's important that the community know that it has some rights around the closed session. Now, I talked to Leslie Cook before this began, and she advised me that it is certainly a part of the Brown Act that you have an open interval in the closed session. That is to say, members of the community can come and speak at that interval, even though the rest of the session is closed, on anything that's on the closed session agenda. But I don't think that most of the community is aware of this, and it doesn't seem to be explicitly stated in these guidelines that you're presenting. And since you're amending them, I would encourage you to simply add a sentence that clarifies that, indeed, the public is invited to speak on any item on the closed session at an open interval prior to the actual meeting of the closed meeting of the City Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Ryan?
I'll move it.
And, of course, my comment was ignored. No such amendment was made. And the item proceeded without any mention of the fact that the public has a right to speak at the closed session, though they can't be present for the closed session. Closed session is an area rife with abuse, I think, in the Santa Cruz City Council level. But that's a subject for another day. Here's a story that I found of interest. I'm going to pass it on to you. It's from the Central Valley. It's from Sacramento. And it reads like this. Lawsuit targets homeless policy. And it's from the Sacramento Bee. Anthony Lair, one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against local governments, and attorney Mark Marin point out where homeless people camp along the Sacramento River. Lair says he was staying beside the river when his belongings were confiscated. The way the city of Sacramento and Sacramento County treat homeless people is unconstitutional, according to a lawsuit to be filed in federal court today, and that was on August 2nd. Attorney Mark Maron is seeking to have his lawsuit certified as a class action on behalf of people living without fixed nighttime shelter, as well as homeless people who have had personal property confiscated and destroyed. Maron said the city and county have historically recognized that there aren't enough beds for the homeless, yet have failed to produce long-term remedies. Does that sound familiar? Maron said Wednesday he would like local government to follow the city of San Diego's example by imposing a moratorium, Los Angeles has also done this, on the arrest of homeless people, allowing them to sleep in public places between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. Those arrangements were negotiated to settle a number of lawsuits, he said. According to Maron's lawsuit in Sacramento, local ordinances prohibiting homeless people from sleeping outside violate the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution because they punish people for being homeless. It also claims the practice of taking and destroying personal property, including necessary survival gear as well as irreplaceable prescription medication, paperwork, memorabilia, valuables, and tools, violates their rights. The suit seeks an injunction barring the city and county from continuing policies and practices alleged to be unconstitutional. And I remind you, Santa Cruz attorneys are preparing the same lawsuit. They need money and support. If you're interested, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. 423-4833. Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, I remind you, is the amendment that prohibits unlawful searches and seizures. And the Jones decision, which was recently depublished but still has a significant impact in Los Angeles, in fact, it's been expanded in Los Angeles, held that arresting homeless people for sleeping is cruel and unusual punishment, a violation of the Eighth Amendment, because the people who are doing these arrests know full well there's no legal place for the people to go. They have to sleep. Sleeping is an involuntary activity, and therefore the arrests violate basic human rights. It also seeks damages, the Sacramento lawsuit, of no less than $4,000 for each time a homeless person who qualifies as a class member was cited for sleeping outdoors. I like that figure. I think we're going to try that in Santa Cruz. Or had personal property seized and destroyed. Sacramento City Attorney Eileen Tatchert said the city is, quote, looking into these allegations. I'm surprised and shocked at them, Tatchert said. During my year and a half in this job, I've been very impressed by the humane outreach efforts to the homeless by the city. It is one of the few cities in the state that has an element in its housing plan for low and very low-income people. This city is exemplary in its treatment of the homeless. It sounds like the Ryan Coonerty of Sacramento. Interesting, though. I like the $4,000 figure, as I said before. Every time John Wallace's Rangers destroy a tent in the Poganip, it should be a $4,000 cost, which might allow homeless people to actually put down first and last month's rent somewhere. What a concept. Sacramento County Council Bob Ryan, Sheriff John McGinnis, and Police Department spokesman Sergeant Matt Young declined to comment Wednesday. Last year, a sweep of homeless camps in northern Sacramento County was preceded by posting of information about where the homeless could receive help if they were interested in getting off the streets. Sheriff's officials said they were trying to do more than just move the homeless from one part of the parking lot, one part of the community to the other. During the winter, the city provides 140 beds at Cal Expo as overflow from the 20-bed Volunteers of America shelter on North A Street and the 32-bed Salvation Army Women's Shelter on North B Street. In one of the largest cities in the state, this is an incredible scandal that they have 200 beds. I mean, Santa Cruz does better than that, and it's a more significant city, at least in the winter, or does as well as that. Actually, not quite as well, but proportionally much better. But, of course, again, we only provide for 5% of the homeless people in the summer and maybe 10% in the winter. Plaintiff Anthony Lair, 49, said Wednesday that everything he owned was confiscated during a cold spell last winter when he was homeless. Lair said he was camping on the Sacramento River bank when authorities took his tent, flannel shirts, sleeping bag, and food. It was the basic things you needed to live, Lair said. Wednesday afternoon, Lair brought Maron out on the levee to show him the spot where he often took refuge and where he lost his belongings. Of course, in Santa Cruz, all those camps are being destroyed along the San Lorenzo River. It's becoming illegal. It has been illegal for months to even walk into that area. And in the Poganip, Rangers cleanup crews are, of course, going through, posting camps, and then destroying them, compacting them, ripping up tents, and trashing homeless gear, with no apologies and no provisions for storage, such as are required by the federal Kincaid decision in Fresno to the south of Sacramento, which may have encouraged this lawsuit in Sacramento. The suit's plaintiffs are 11 individuals who are representative of the homeless. Loaves and Fishes, a nonprofit organization that provides services to the homeless, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, an unincorporated association of homeless and formerly homeless people, and Francis House, a nonprofit organization that provides counseling to the poor. Besides the city and county, defendants include Sacramento Police Chief Albert Najera and McGinnis. The solution to homelessness is housing, Marin said in an interview. It is not harassing homeless people until they go away. On any given night, there are about 1,000 people out on the street because the shelters are full. Many of them camp on the riverbanks, but they are regularly rousted by law enforcement. They are cited for camping illegally or possessing a shopping cart, Marin said. They don't show up in court, and a warrant is issued for failure to appear. They are arrested, processed through the jail, and prosecuted. Then the cycle starts all over again. I think his figure is probably low for Sacramento. I think there are 1,500 to 2,000 people here in the city of Santa Cruz, which is one-tenth or less the size of Sacramento. Of course, we are a beachfront town, and there's a kind of a different, a varied group of homeless people here of different kinds. And also, the failure to appear is not used so much by the courts anymore. Instead, they use failure to pay, which essentially ruins for life the credit ratings of homeless people, but that doesn't make the police have to bother to go and pick them up and arrest them. They simply have these citations that simply go on their record. Here's a second story on that. Lawsuit targets homeless policy. Again, a Sacramento Bee story. On the same day. And actually, it's the same story, for heaven's sake. I don't have to read it twice. Once is enough. This was sent to me as an email, and it includes the following commentary by Richard Sipion. The city of Sacramento continues to harass the homeless, from the pressure to clear the homeless out of the downtown sector, sound familiar, to random sweeps of the Sacramento River to rid the river of homeless camps, sound familiar, to the now targeting of homeless people in city parks, sound familiar. The city's dealings with the homeless is unrelentless. I guess he means relentless. And I hope a federal lawsuit finally puts the Sacramento PD in tune with how they should be helping their homeless instead of harassing them constantly. Sacramento's homeless need legal training by the ACLU on civil liberties and their rights. July 31st of 2007, I was sitting in the Starbucks across from I Street Park in Sacramento, California. It was a Tuesday at about 3 p.m. in the afternoon. There were several homeless people distributed in several parts of the park. All they were doing was just standing around and getting some shade from the extreme heat. It must have been over 100 degrees that day. I stepped out of the Starbucks after having been working on a physics PowerPoint presentation for one of my classes. I noticed several Sacramento police officers, foot officers, and three on bicycles in the park, maybe 4 to 6 officers, and they were speaking to every homeless person they can see. The officers appear to be going up to homeless people who were loitering in the park and questioning the intent of why the homeless people were in the park. I just stared at the actions of the officers and began walking across the street. This is what they're going to be doing in the parking lots now. The bicycle officers rode off. As I walked close to one side of the park, officers walked to the other side of the park, and perhaps 2 officers remained in the park. As I began talking to homeless people in the park about what the officers were doing, one homeless person said that as he was lying down, one police officer approached him and asked him if he was under intoxication. Or perhaps he means intoxicated. Then the officer ran a warrant check on the homeless person. Don't have to give your name and address to an officer unless the officer has probable cause to believe you're guilty of committing a crime. And even then, if you're arrested, you can say nothing. That is your choice and your right. Well, you may be given an additional charge of obstructing an officer. That's my addition to that. I'm not a lawyer. That's my experience. The homeless person told the officer that and said the city had a new policy of not allowing individuals to lay on the city grass in the city parks because the city sprayed or treated the city parks grass, that the officer's orders were from Sacramento City Hall specifically. I asked more homeless people in the park how often they were bothered by Sacramento Police Department officers over such causes, and it became apparent that it was a daily occurrence. I walk back into the Starbucks at 6 p.m. I'm leaving, and as I leave, I see a Sacramento police car driving in the middle of the park. I said to myself, this is unbelievable. And I took out my cell phone, and I record the police car for 30 seconds so that the officer knows that I, a concerned citizen, am watching the officer's actions. The police car spots me and leaves the area immediately. I even capture good video with even better audio. I'll admit I am not a Sacramento resident. In fact, I am not up to date on what the city of Sacramento can legally do with its homeless. And this continues on indiebay.org/Central Valley, if you'd like to read it. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, this is Linda. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Linda. You have about 3 minutes to make your statement.
Sorry to call so late. You probably already touched on it. I just wanted to share with your listeners about the news that I heard that one of our greatest leaders has died, speaking of poor people.
I actually haven't mentioned it. I was waiting for you to call.
I'm sorry it's so late in your show.
There is an email out from Becky Johnson. Huff remembers these deceased sleeping ban repeal activists, and I think I'll be posting that on Indie Bay later tonight, perhaps, and it lists a great number of people. The most recent of which is Jane Immler, who died on Tuesday.
Yeah, and was a good friend of both of ours and saved a lot of lives. But I remember more as this rascally girl, you know, one of the several whose handcuffs were tied to the River Street Shelter outer building, let's say. One of the rooms that they were going to, like, not let anybody sleep in because somebody had fumbled the paperwork for the fire inspection. They kept leaving it night after night empty. And Malou was there. Who else was there? Probably you and Linda Edwards.
Yeah, let me just say that Jane Immler in 1985, along with you, Linda, and other people, did a 33-day hunger fast where one of her kidneys was essentially trashed in order to get the city to open the first cold and rainy night shelter. And as a protest against the sleeping ban or the camping ban ordinance generally, they were successful in opening the first cold and rainy night shelter for one winter in what is now the Cumbois Jazz Center. The next year, you and she and others did a hunger fast in 1986
and got
the River Street Shelter's mini shelter property, the thing you mentioned where we all locked ourselves down 3 years later to open up the annex because they wouldn't open it up because they claimed it had to be, you know, there were various problems with it, but after we all got arrested and made publicity, they did open it up, strangely enough.
Yeah, in less than 24 hours they finished dealing with their red tape.
I mean, Jane was a wonderful woman. I think we need to talk about her more at the next show because I don't think we have any time. It's 8 o'clock.
She's the one that got the original use permit for starting a meal at the camp, at the land they bought for homeless people and then didn't do anything with. I mean, the city bought
a free meal, also known as, which became
Calamity Jane's Cupboard, and now the whole Coral Street ghetto, homeless people's ghetto.
The Homeless Service Center, actually, it's now
homeless
called.
Homeless Service Center.
Was because of essentially pioneering work from Jane Immler, also known as Martha Jane Immler,
mm-hmm.
who came from Los Angeles. Actually, that was where she was before she came here.
Yeah.
What else we got to say about her?
That's about it. We had 3 minutes, she said. I've learned 3 minutes from the city. I have a lot to say about her, but not if, you know, we can't wax poetic. I just see her as one of the important early leaders in a movement that isn't quite recognized as a movement, and a creative one, and a problem-solving genius. She could get people to do things they didn't even know they could do.
Well, she got me involved, that's for sure. But
yeah. I never saw anybody like her push you around in my life.
She ran for city council in 1988. She ran for sheriff in 1987.
Yeah.
We'll be talking more about her on Sunday when I come back.
She ran for council a couple times. That's when I met Ed Porter following her campaign.
Really? I thought she only ran once, but that's interesting to hear.
I think she ran for sheriff twice, too, but I'm not sure.
Hmm. Well, yeah. I know, Linda, I'd like to hear from you. I know you were the chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force. You've done a lot of work throughout your life on this issue, and hopefully we can get more from you on this.
Yeah, we can, but when you said I only had 3 minutes, I kind of blanked out some of the...
Right, you don't even have 3 minutes. So we're Uncle Dennis is here and
hi, Uncle Dennis.
Setting up.
Hi, Linda.
You know, and indeed, this is his show time. So
play some Doors.
But he's got a couple
James
of these light brown apple moths with him. Get out! Get out of the studio. Okay.
Ew, no, yeah, I'm not going to talk to apple moths.
Okay,
no
good.
Way.
Well, actually, they're
going to be so
I'm
confused.
Just kidding around, if you may imagine. Yeah, well, listen, Linda, thanks for calling in. If you can call back on Sunday.
I might be able to. I don't know. My life's fucked right now. But I think people in Santa Cruz who were her friends are going to want to get together at some point in person and share their memories in a big circle.
I think so.
So we'll figure that out, too.
All right. Well, thanks for being with me, and we'll get back. And in the meantime, if anybody's got any questions about anything they've heard on the air today, wants phone numbers, wishes to know how to perhaps demolish airfields in order to stop the light brown apple moth, Uncle Dennis will be providing that kind of useful information on his show.
Thanks,
yes, indeed. Thanks. Thank you.
Homeland Security
is funding this, my boy. We have to get some interest here.
Yeah.
Anyway, Linda, thank you, and get back to me later. I'm going to be I'll be downtown for a while. Get in touch with me by phone if you want.
Would you call me after your show
the
air?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's it for Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Go to the Huff website for more information, probably 2 years out of date, but still very interesting, www.huffsantacruz.org. These shows are archived. In case you haven't had enough punishment, that's at the same website under the name of the show, Bathurst Spears Broadsides. And now it's Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs.
And thank you, Robert. Settling in here to the warm chair that Robert always leaves.
It's the hot seat.
So Linda wants to hear some doors. Well, we'll put some doors on for you in just a second. I do want to clear up any misrepresentations or misinterpretations of things that I said on the phone earlier. I want to point out that I am not in favor of this spraying campaign. I don't think that there's enough evidence that this spraying campaign is going to work. I also don't know what's in this, what all the compounds are in the spray that they're spraying. But I do want to say the following. I have done some research, and I would hope that people who are speaking on this issue do their research. I know that there would be people out there, if airplanes were spraying distilled water over Santa Cruz, there would be somebody who would object to it, and maybe rightly so. But I think that people who speak out on this issue should do so from a factual basis, and not say things that are totally wrong. And that's the reason I called in about the gentleman who thought that maybe men would have something happen to them. Well, we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know that the active ingredient doesn't particularly affect human beings. That's one thing that you can get when you go and read the literature on this. If you're looking for that literature, go to the web, Google the Sutera website. What you're going to want to look for is something called the Material Safety Data Sheet, the MSDS. And when you get the MSDS, it will list the chemicals. Google the chemicals that you read on the MSDS. And then do some research. You will find yourself in entomology publications. Entomology, the study of insects. And insects are amazing creatures. They find themselves by the use of these pheromone chemicals and breed their little hearts to their little heart's delight. So make sure what you're knowing, make sure you know what you're talking about. But Uncle Dennis is not in favor of the spraying. Okay? I'm also not in favor of the spraying of malathion either. Okay. What is the light brown apple moth? It's an invasive, exotic insect. In other words, it's not native here. It doesn't belong here. And personally, I don't want it here. But I'm not in favor particularly of spraying. If thousands and thousands of Santa Cruz and Monterey County residents wanted to get together and put these little twist ties out in the environment at 40,000 twist ties per acre per month, then I'm all for it. Okay? Get together, go and do this thing by hand. That's fine with me. Okay? If we will get rid of the little brown apple moth. So, anyway, just wanted to clear that up. Because I got some feedback that it sounded like I was in favor of the spraying. I am not in favor of the spraying. Anyway, it's time to get on with things here. This is a radio show called From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to be playing music from the 60s and 70s for the next 3 hours or so. At 9 o'clock, we will have the Earth First Update, environmental news, including a news story about the spraying. And then at 10 o'clock, we will have our spotlight group of the week. So one thing I will say is I have a big, thick stack of records that I bought down at the local recycled record store. And I will be, and we will be hearing some of those throughout the show. But Linda, you wanted to hear some Doors. Here's some Doors for you.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here. Dug our treasures there. Okay.